third case on our docket this morning is Biddle versus the Warren General Hospital. Again, the Chief Justice has read the briefs and will be participating in the discussion and decision in this case. You see where the each side has been allotted 20 minutes, and it appears that the parties have agreed that Mr. Zapp is going to go first, or is it Mr. Richards? Mr. Richards?
Well, I'm from Biddle, Ohio. I represent Warren General Hospital and the Chubb Richards in this case. With me today is Mr. Charles Richards from Warren, Ohio, who represents the law firm. We would like to collectively reserve 2 minutes of the allotted 24 in rebuttal, and I'm going to try to hear the coughing behind me and sit down as I halfway through the 18 minutes which we're devoting to the main brief, or the main argument. Your Honor, from our perspective, this case boils down to, for all the assignments that they are, for all the briefs, for the cross appeals, this case, in my view, boils down to this issue. Is a hospital liable, can it be liable, for the disclosure of confidential patient information where the only person who is getting that information is its lawyer in the context of an attorney-client relationship? And it is undisputed by everyone here that that is exactly what happened.
So let me back you up. So you're saying this case does not turn on whether or not there are any valid or potentially valid causes of action set forth in the court. I gathered reading what we tried to phrase that we talked about, the logical causes of action.
I did not characterize the concept of breach of confidentiality as a mythological course of action. If you read the cases that
don't you agree the hospital has a duty to
maintain confidentiality, and if you read the cases that are cited in the Court of Appeals decision, especially the cases from other jurisdictions that apply this toward breach of confidentiality, that there is no vested interest by anybody on the issue of confidentiality. Everybody recognizes that it needs to be protected. Ironically, the breach of confidentiality cases seem to come from Judge Bill Connell's decision in 1965 in the Northern District of Ohio in the Cameron's case, which went off on the notion that there is an implied contract of confidentiality between a hospital or a doctor and a patient. This, and Judge Cacioppo, in the Sun Freeze Court, deals with that cause of action, and that cause of action on this issue is indistinguishable from breach of confidentiality.
So, your view is you can see there is a duty, and the complaint sets up the allegations of breach of confidentiality, and in fact, and the information conveyed here, if it went to an inappropriate person or someone other than the lawyer for the hospital, would the kind of information set up as that?
It would not be, in my judgment, laborious to the contrary notwithstanding an invasion of privacy under this court's rule of natural respect, not without a publication. However, under either Judge Connell's analysis in Hammonds, which is a binding on the court of instructive, or the breach of confidentiality cases, I don't quarrel with the notion that there may be circumstances in which, for example, an alcohol treatment center sends a bill and a diagnosis of alcoholism from a wife to a husband's co-employer for no apparent reason. There may not be a publication there, but if someone tells me, well, let's go to those jurisdictions and find breach of confidentiality, that's okay with me. That's okay with me. But the problem is, this is not that case.
And so let me take you then to what you've been saying is the reason you're conscious with, and that is that these this information went just to the lawyers for the hospital.
Right.
And that's the key to the case.
There was a law issue, and the law as it relates to hospitals, and that is circumstances in which it's known to an agent, someone who is doing something for the hospital in the legitimate exercise of its business, under circumstances where there is not likely going to be a disclosure. But it's certainly true where the agent is a lawyer.
Okay, well, that's the subject of the suit.
Yes.
At this time, you take a lawyer for the hospital and they find this contract where they were going to scan these things looking for potential sources of remuneration to the patients. And there was a contingent deal with the hospital. The information provided, however, was not limited to people who had demonstrated inability to pay for those in terms of the business.
So it's not.
The information went before you ever knew what the insurance coverage was.
Unless the insurance coverage was on the face of the registration form, that's right. But in any event, I concede to you that the hospital did not screen these records. And I would argue that there's that two arguments.
Now, let me pursue the next step. The lawyer screen them looking for potential social security.
Right.
And then they phone these folks up and say, hey, you may have a claim and we can help you out with it.
No. However, if they said that, in my reading of the disciplinary rules, they might be in front of this court on the left. friendly.
I thought there was something that said their representation.
They said, we are calling you on behalf of Ward General Hospital.
Okay, I understand.
You may be eligible for supplemental security benefits.
Right.
Come on in and talk to us. And what Heller said in his deposition, I represent Heller, but when he said his deposition was, I swear I did not, and I would not suggest myself as a lawyer. I merely would tell them what their rights are and point them to the Social Security Administration.
So they didn't take any of these cases?
They did apparently end up with five of these cases.
Okay, so now when they take these cases, what's their arrangement with the client?
The arrangement with the client, I'm not sure I recall what the testimony was about that, but I believe it was they would have a contingency arrangement with a client as well in a circumstance like that.
Now, for me, you get a big knock to the client when you tell me that. But this is protected because these are lawyers from the hospital. They send out, you give them this confidential information. They call up the people, say, come on down. Ultimately, they take cases and then take a contingency arrangement. To me, it looks like an opportunity to shop for clients rather than anything else.
If it is an opportunity to shop for clients, let me start with that. If that's what it is, the disciplinary rules deal with that. We don't deal with that by calling it breach of confidentiality and holding everybody liable.
Well, why not?
Because
the disciplinary rules enable us to deal with the lawyers, but they don't offer any opportunity for the victims of this scheme, or the victims of this procedure, I don't use the word scheme, to have any opportunity for remedy under the theory of your advantage. That is, if it's wrong for the lawyers to do this, go see disciplinary.
I don't concede that it's wrong for the lawyers to do this. There are two separate representations involved here. We are interested in gaining a payment, potential third-party payment on a hospital bill.
SSI eligibility means you qualify for Medicare. If they qualify for Medicare and they don't get paid, we pay a contingent fee on that. If the patient decides in certain circumstances that the patient wants to use this Elliott Keller firm to pursue a claim of SSI, if there is a dispute about it, that is between the patient and Elliott Keller. It becomes a problem only if there is a conflict of interest between the hospital and the patient, and there is not on those facts. If a conflict comes, then Elliott Keller's got to withdraw. He can't represent either one of them. But there is no victim here. There's no victim on two grounds.
If the patient went in for the
Mr. Whitney, with following up with Justice Piper's question, let's assume that for a minute. Where are we? Okay. Where are we with these plaintiffs and damages? Because I gather that the disclosure that was at all claimed to be harmful didn't occur by the hospital or the lawyer. Is there an issue about damages, even?
I believe that even if this case is affirmed, there may be an issue about damages back in the trial court.
Mm-hmm.
But I do not believe that we reach the point of harm. Yeah. It goes back to the point Justice Piper made, and that is the question of victims. There are no victims here because this law firm, There is nobody in our society who faces a greater sanction for releasing confidential information than lawyers do. It is one of those ironies about this case. As I seem evidently thought it was a story because it involved not the boogeyman, but lawyers. But lawyers are duty bound by the disciplinary rules to protect confidentiality.
You're concerned about the television station, the publication, and issues that just could come down to the damages or whether or not there are any damages in this case. But this case, that is what you're arguing is simply outlined to provide this information to the lawyers.
Everybody agrees that there is an attorney-client relationship in existence between the hospital and the law firm, and everybody, including the Court of Appeals, agrees that these documents were given to the law firm in the context of that relationship and as such were imbued with the disciplinary rules, requirements of confidentiality. These documents weren't going anywhere.
Does this formally mean that anytime an agency like a hospital or a doctor or even a lawyer for that matter sends his or her file or its file to a collection of
Yes. It also means that whenever a lawyer hired by a hospital or a doctor to review a potential incident or malpractice looks at the patient's file, he is violating his obligation of confidentiality.
I think it's important to have
Lawyers are deemed third parties under this opinion for the purpose of application of the doctrine of breach of confidentiality. In effect, means nothing less than every time a lawyer sits down in this state with a client, he must or she must open with the statement, "Now, before you tell me what I need to know to represent you, I got to tell you first. Don't tell me any confidential information. Either medical information about somebody else, employer-employee information, blankenship things, or there may be an issue about
machines and bars.
Was that really a violation of confidentiality? Wasn't the violation when the hospital sent these records over to the attorney's office? Has nothing to do with the client something about to the attorney. The violation already occurred.
I'm talking about circumstances there, where you are forced to modulate the attorney-client relationship from the standpoint of the notion that that a law firm or a lawyer, your lawyer, is a third party for the purpose of disclosure of confidential information, which is exactly what the opinion says. The violation occurred here when a disgruntled secretary walked out of the law firm with confidential documents, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, my name is Charles Richards, and I'm here on behalf of the law firm defendants. Let me say, first of all, something you disclosed to the scheme took place here. I'm going to explain that in a moment. If you'll permit me first, just to make one very clear point. The law firm defendants stand liable as we speak to 9,000 patients of the hospital simply because the law firm sought to obtain the information it needed to perform its lawyerly duty to its client.
Who initiated this plan?
Well, there was a meeting at which the plan was discussed. The law firm
who came up with it? Did the hospital come up with this idea, or did the law firm?
That's a little unclear. I think that it was Mr. Heller in the
question.
I think it was Mr. Heller from the law firm who had the knowledge of the Social Security system.
Went down to the hospital to suggest, if he gave us all of these records, we might be able to help you collect a little more money.
That's true. But it's important to understand, Your Honor, that the client of the law firm was the hospital. The patients of the hospital were not the law firm's clients. The law firm was representing the hospital. The law firm had a theory with the hospital. Unfortunately, Mr. Whitney, not representing the law firm, has the facts a little bit darker. The law firm didn't get its fee from the hospital's patients. It had no fee arrangement with them. There was not one fee. The Social Security Administration, just by operation of law, apparently, will pay a fee if a lawyer gets a person's benefit. That happened in one case here. The amount of money was $400, and that money was turned back to the hospital by the law firm. The law firm did not make one piece of it. It stands liable to 9,000 people simply because it took the information it needed to do its work, and it didn't make one dime worth of fees in this case. Not a dime. Nothing was wrong here. The only thing that was wrong here was the Court of Appeals has imposed on the law firm and the hospital what I call strict liability.
Well, maybe what went wrong was the idea in the first place. Maybe they aren't.
Well, Your Honor, how is this any different than a hospital giving its law firm the information to sue a patient whose bill is unpaid? I think the wrongdoers here are the people who didn't pay their bill.
Counsel, why didn't the hospital consider the patient and discuss this with them before they turned it over to anybody?
Your Honor, that defense argument will be made by my opponent in a moment.
Well, I don't want to hear that. I want to hear your answer.
My answer to it is that it would be impractical to do it, and because the hospital didn't have the ability to do it.
No, I mean impractical. We're talking about a duty that you owe to the patient for confidentiality. Is that duty bendable if there's some problem or it takes too much trouble doing it or it costs? What is it? What was it that kept you from talking to the patients first? Was it money? Was it time? Was it what? What was it?
Your Honor, I'm not the hospital. I represent the law firm.
Okay.
Mr. Whitney, I think, agrees.
Maybe I should have asked him the question.
Well, I'll answer for him, because I know the answer.
What's the answer?
The hospital has a duty. which in my mind, and I think in Mr. Whitley's mind, is inviolable and unbreakable, not to breach patient confidentiality. The issue presented to this court, and I'm going to say that I don't think in terms of cases that this court has heard involving lawyers, I doubt you've heard a more important one in years than this one. The issue here is whether by giving that information to the lawyers, they breach that patient confidentiality. And all I'm here to say to this court is that since the lawyers have a duty to hold this information in confidence, there is no breach.
But they wouldn't have had the problem if they talked to the patients before they did this. Correct?
Correct, but if you let me finish...
I mean, that we wouldn't be here.
If let me explain something. There's something that the lawyers does not understand.
I'm trying to hear the answer.
Nobody at the hospital knew enough about the Social Security working to determine which patients might be eligible. That's why the hospital didn't call the patients. The hospital had to rely on the lawyers to see from the patient registration form who might be eligible. There was no way the hospital could do that. So that's why they sent the information to the law firm. They needed the expertise of the lawyers to scan these personal registration forms and say, this guy's perhaps eligible, this guy's not.
Well, why did they find... Why didn't they find out the information then from the lawyers? The lawyers give the hospital. Now these are the criteria by which the Social Security makes their decisions. These are the things that we would have to find out. Now if you find them out from the patient, then you determine who's eligible.
It's not an unreasonable way to do it, Your Honor.
You
understand that there was some publication for third parties here. The law firm never gave this information to anybody but the patients themselves. How can this law firm be elected if all of a sudden they take the information from the hospital and then contact the very person about whose information they relate to the patient?
They could have told the hospital that, listen, this is a very touchy area. We can't do anything with these records until you, the hospital, get permission from the patient beforehand. And until you get that okay from them, we're not going to do anything with them. That's what you could have done.
Your Honor, when a patient falls in the hospital and breaks his hip, and the risk manager calls me and asks me to review the incident report from the patient's chart and advise the hospital as to whether there's liability and how much that could cost the hospital, does the court want me to tell my risk manager to call up the patient and see if it's okay? If that's what happens, we're never going to be able to get to the bottom of these types of things. And that's the precedent we're
talking about.
The apples and
oranges.
Of
course it
is. Patients signed all kinds of consent forms, and you can just add another paragraph that says, if you do not pay your bill in a timely fashion, we will be sending out information, we will be disclosing information to our attorney, you know, and have them sign that. Or if you got the other incident, if you are injured while on the premises of the hospital, we will have to refer this. But call it to the patient's attention beforehand, so that it's so easy to do. The hospital certainly knows how to do it.
I appreciate the question. It gives me a chance to speak to something that's great doing here.
Very briefly.
Yes. That's not the worst idea in the world, Your Honor, but it raises a couple of questions. First of all, the consent form that this hospital did in fact use expressly authorized the release of records to third parties for billing purposes, for collection purposes. Now, if we add the provision about the lawyers, how many people are going to sign it?
Let me tell you, when you go there, you don't have any choice. Last time I was there, they said, you want to sign this? And I said, yeah. They said, don't you want to read it? And I said, well, the procedure you're going to perform on me, I don't like number 7, the death may result. Can I cross that out? And he said,
well,
no.
It seems to me, Your Honor, that if you're allowing your hospital records to be sent to insurance companies and third-party payors, how can you be harmed who has no requirement of confidentiality? How can you be harmed when it's given to lawyers who want to hold it in confidence?
Okay.
That's what happened.
You understand your argument, and we'll give them another chance to rebut it.
Thank you.
their damages?
The damages are the infringement upon the privacy of the patient and having this information disclosed to any party without their consent.
Well, let's start with, are you calling this a tort? The breach of confidentiality is a breach of confidentiality is a tort?
Yes.
We know the full thrust is establish a tort, and the last is damage. We have to show some damage before we can hold them responsible?
Well, I think the damage, Your Honor, is implicit in the entire body of law that says that breaches of confidentiality in and of themselves are actionable. If this information is released, even if it's one person.
Yeah, but usually when it's broadcast or published, there is some damage, some quantifiable damage.
For example, Your Honor, where it has not been broadcast or published, but it has been released to a very limited number of individuals, including, in certain cases, to the husband of the patient. Certainly, a husband receiving information about a wife is no more egregious than a law.
It doesn't matter. You have an attorney who has something like this, and I can ask you about this.
I'm glad you're
here. Where is